The Biden administration ordered U.S. companies with 100 or more employees to have their workers fully vaccinated or regularly tested for the coronavirus by January 4th. Seth Meyers said, all right, you heard the man, Arcade Fire. Jimmy Fallon, it's great timing. Make sure everybody's vaccinated right after the holidays. That's kind of a rerun joke of a recent Halloween joke, Jimmy Fallon writers. Jimmy Kimmel, Team Biden announced that more than 100 million American workers are required to be fully vaccinated by January 4th. And if I know my fellow American workers, everybody's going to be super chill about that, Corden, because I guess January 1st is just way too obvious. Corden, what's the thinking here? Nobody expects the policy to start on a random Tuesday. Let's do that. Kimmel, like the drunkest friend at a bachelor party, Joe Biden's going to make sure everybody gets shots. From St. Louis Today, growing up in Maryland and going through her weird high school depression, Rachel Feinstein found solace and laughter in making prank calls. The calls have not stopped. Rachel and friend Jessica Kirsten have collaborated on an album called The Call Girls. I see what you did there. And the tracks include Sex Shop, Gymnastics Lesson, Massage Parlor, Bikini Discount, and more. How naughty. Rachel is a headliner at the Flyover Comedy Festival tonight. She's at the Hot Java Bar. Everything sounds dirty in today's podcast, huh? The new album rose from Rachel's struggles during the pandemic. For months, she was unable to tour, but a bright spot was giving birth to her first child. Unfortunately, her husband was not allowed in the delivery room because of COVID-19 restrictions. There was this pandemic. Did you hear about it? Look it up. It was all over the news if you missed it. Rachel said, it was a weird, isolated time. It was also a jacked up time. Really? And in the middle of all this, I made the prank album. We started prank calling strangers. It was fun and it made me happy. Instead of rocking back and forth in my nightgown and humming, we would make these weird calls. The pranks album got me through. Rachel says a prank call is most successful when you're able to keep the other party on the line. One trick that works for them is pretending to be old. People put up with anything for old ladies. You can get them engaged in the most absurd things possible. St. Louis Today asked, such as calling a massage parlor and requesting a socially distanced massage by a masseuse with very long arms, or even a virtual massage. That's kind of funny. A lot of people just hung up and didn't want anything to do with us. We do call back. They're already planning a sequel to The Call Girls. It will likely become a series of albums. She enjoys any project where she can work with friends, such as when she teamed with Amy Schumer for Amy Schumer Presents Rachel Feinstein, Only Whores Wear Purple. All of my closest friends are really funny comedians. Amy Schumer, Marina Franklin, Nikki Glaser. We've gotten a lot of work together. They were featured on a 2013 comedy special, Women Who Kill. They're my dear friends, and it's great to be able to make stuff together with them. She's grateful for fans showing up at live comedy shows once again. What a gift that is. There was speculation it was dead. Would people want to be packed in basements anymore? But it's good. People need that release as well. If you're seeing her tonight at the Hot Java, whatever I said it is, it's not a clean show. There are parts that are sick and wrong. It's a good hang, but maybe don't bring your five-year-old. I love the crowds in St. Louis. I'm always grateful to be there. You can say whatever you want. You don't have to be cautious. It's not a PC crowd. People are loose there, and I love the barbecue. The AARP are your home for comedy news. They talked to Ricky Gervais. Ricky talked about hosting awards shows, and he said, if you want to have an award show, great, do it. But if you don't want to make it fun, don't televise it. I try to make it a spectator sport. I know what I'm doing. These aren't rooms full of wounded soldiers. These are billionaires and the heads of massive media conglomerates. If you can't punch at the richest and most privileged people, who can you have a go at? Ricky was asked why The Office was such a hit. Ricky, I think it's because of empathy. We all want to be loved. We all want to be noticed. We all want to be appreciated. The mistake is when we try too hard, and that's the comedy of it. We either watch it going, oh my God, I've done that, or oh, thank God, I've never done that. Comedy is the understanding that we're all idiots, we all do stupid things, but it's all right. We're all going to die someday. You have to be able to laugh at yourself. Our anthropologists think that the first joke, so to speak, was one caveman seeing another caveman hitting his head on the cave ceiling and going, ow. The other caveman laughs because he's done it too. He knows it hurts and knows how it feels, but he's also glad he's not the idiot who just did it to himself. At 60, I'm like an old classic car. There are a few dings and dents, a few things that need repair, but my body is just a chassis. My brain is what I care about. That's what I want to stay sharp. So I learn things. I'll find Albert Einstein on YouTube explaining a theory of relativity, or I'll listen to a podcast about the deep reaches of space. It almost makes me forget that when I play tennis now, my body hurts for 3 weeks, not 3 minutes. The AV Club spoke to Bobcat Goldthwait, who I've been obsessed with lately, and an AV Club was like, hey, Bobcat Goldthwait, you're doing so many other things now, like directing and writing. What brings you back to stand-up? Bobcat said, I guess it sounds corny, but I think it's in my DNA. It was interesting not doing it for 15, 16 months and then getting back there. I was like, oh, this is who I am. Actually, there was a time where I thought I hated it and I was wrong. I just really hated the persona that I was doing, so I had to make a decision to stop doing it. And I did that one night in Nashville, and I knew I had to go on as myself. And it was funny because people were yelling out, do the voice and stuff like that, which is my daughter's favorite heckle. How long ago was it when he stopped doing the voice? Bobcat. It had to be at least 15 years ago, maybe even more. Sometimes I would do it in the alt venues in LA, go up as myself, but on the road, it's just there's this expectation. And I think I had this working class kind of idea like, well, I have to do the show that people want to see. And eventually I realized I can't do this anymore. It was just doing an act and not being myself. Hey, Bobcat, as a kid, what stand-ups did you like? Bobcat said, in the doc, we definitely talk about it a little, like Andy Kaufman. Also, when I was a kid and I discovered Mel Brooks, I saw Young Frankenstein. It was the first time, I was probably 12 or 13. I bought a ticket and watched it and went out in the lobby and bought another ticket and went back in and watched it again. Now I know I could have just sat there. That's what I was thinking as I read it. In Young Frankenstein, Mel Brooks took two genres and he did a comedy, but out of all his movies, that's the one truest to the story. You know, moments where it's just sad and you wonder if they're going to get back together. Because of that, I feel like it definitely influenced my movies. Like, I'll do a movie like Call Me Lucky, which is a film about child abuse, and it's as dark as it gets, but there's still comedy in it. So I love mixing genres when I'm making stuff. So like Mel Brooks, Monty Python, the original SNL, and George Carlin was a big one. Dana Gould and I both had the same experience when we watched George Carlin doing this poem on hair that he did, and he did it on Dinah Shore, and I saw it, and it was the first time I realized that people did that for a living, and it made me think I would do this. But it's interesting, I was always writing ideas for sketches and movies, even though I was thinking about what I would do on stage as a comic. All this when I was a little kid, and I wish I could find those notebooks. I was just saying this morning to my girlfriend Nora, thinking about how George Carlin changed my life, and then later on in life, I worked with him and became friends with him. It was pretty great. Today's Daily Comedy News is brought to you by Palace Intrigue. That's the podcast where I'm the writer. We talk about the royal family for like 5 minutes a day, but like an actual 5 minutes, not like the 20-minute 5 minutes that this podcast is. That one's actually 5 minutes. And basically, we make fun of Meghan Markle. I was talking with the voice of Palace Intrigue, Mark Francis, just an hour ago. And we were like, yeah, we just got to lean in on the Meghan stuff. That's where the action is at. So if you like making fun of Meghan Markle, Palace Intrigue, wherever you get your shows. The New York Comedy Festival, almost over. It's had a pretty good week. Today at 5:30, My Dad Isn't Danny DeVito is the name of a show by comedian Anthony DeVito. I've had my eye on Anthony. I make that sound like I'm some sort of super talent scout. But Anthony, I've noticed him, and I think he's pretty good. So check him out. My Dad Isn't Danny DeVito. He's at Union Hall at 5:30. Brian Regan, you probably know about him if you listen to this every day. He's at the Beacon at 7. Mark Maron, you've heard of him. He's at Town Hall. I would love to see Maron. I haven't seen Maron in a while. I woke up today in a different city and should be home now, but not going to make it to Town Hall tonight. And Gary Gulman, who's awesome. He's Born on Third Base. That's the name of his show. He's playing Carnegie Hall at 8 o'clock. Good for you, Gary Gulman. Alex Murray is the tour manager for people like Jim Gaffigan, Nikki Glaser, Jim Jeffries, Nate Bargatze, and David Spade. Pretty good list of clients there, huh? Alex spoke to The Hollywood Reporter and said, the good news is that comedy shows are happening. The bad news is they're a little clunky. Each week, there seems to be a different type of challenge that we have to solve. The obstacles include COVID, vaccine mandates, international travel limitations, competition for dates as comics and musicians plan simultaneous returns to the stage. Yeah, I talked with Larry the Cable Guy about that maybe a year ago when Larry came on the show. And the thing that's going to happen is, if everybody goes on tour, well, say the Rolling Stones want to play Madison Square Garden, they're going to get it. So if Bill Burr wanted to play MSG, well, he can't because the Stones are there. So then Burr has to go down to the next biggest thing. So I'll make up, let's say he plays Radio City. But if he's at Radio City, well, then maybe Gary Gulman can't play Radio City, so Gary Gulman will play the Beacon Theater, which means, and so on and so on, you get the idea. As a result, comics may be doing fewer shows and more traveling, and a careful selection of cities and venues with COVID-safe regulations can leave lucrative areas off a tour route, all while navigating a wildly inconsistent ticket landscape that's packing some venues and leaving others with no shows. Kara Baker reps Rob Delaney and Eliza Schlesinger and said, some places we've sold 75 tickets and have 400 to go. Some places we've sold 4,000 tickets. Like, what? Who are these people that want to go out? In 2019, the last normal year of touring, the world's top 10 highest-earning comics brought in a combined $272 million. Insiders estimate this year's total will be half of that if the industry's lucky. with some of the biggest comedy names, including Kevin Hart, Jerry Seinfeld, Amy Schumer, and Chris Rock, having not yet returned with full-scale world tours. Alex Murray says Jim Jefferies went to Australia for a short tour this summer and quarantined for the required 2 weeks, but as soon as he was free to start performing, the country shut down, forcing him to postpone shows, which he had sold 40 to 50,000 tickets. The Hollywood Reporter says in the U.S., where the Mulaney's and the Burrs of the world are settling out, for less than superstar acts, the turnouts for theater shows, especially out of the gate in the summer and into the fall, are not as strong across the board. Several comedians have noticed the 50-plus demographic is especially lagging. On top of that, since the Delta variant took hold, there's been a drop-off, Alex Murray said. For about 4 weeks in August and September, ticket sales really slowed down and halted. Plus, some people are simply not using their tickets. AEG Presents comedy VP Sam Kinkin said, on average, pre-pandemic, you might see 3 to 5% of people who just don't show up. Something happens, they can't get a babysitter, the dog, whatever it is. Now we're seeing rates that can be sometimes between 15 and 30%. He credits about half of that to folks forgetting about rescheduled dates, but sees a 10 to 15% drop that I think is entirely due to the Delta situation. All of this is setting up what the comedy world is betting on will be a full-blown comeback in 2022. Kinkin said, if you think it's an onslaught now, wait until the first few quarters of next year. Everybody is out on tour because nobody's worked and people got to eat. People got to make some money. And that is your comedy news for today. Follow this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Good Pods, Spotify, wherever you get your shows. If you like what I do here, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/dailycomedynews. You can throw a couple bucks in the tip jar. Recommended amount is $5. I will take your $5. I will go to National Donuts chain. I will buy a large iced coffee with milk and caramel. I will drink it, and I will say your name on the podcast. Is that not worth $5? Surely it is. See you tomorrow.